Bonjour, hi, I'm Pascal Auclair. I hope this talk supports you in your practice. J'espère que cet enseignement vous sera aidant. If you'd like to support my teaching, you can use the donate button underneath my picture on Dharma Seed. Vous pouvez me soutenir en cliquant sur le bouton sous ma photo. Your support is greatly appreciated. Merci.
So I notice in me very slight nervousness, and I think I can see the cause of this, because at lunchtime Tara and I were talking, and I announced, well, we came up together somewhat with a theme for this afternoon. And I tend to teach a lot alone, or often maybe we don't talk about what we'll talk at the talk. But now I kind of committed, and now it's really interesting. Huh? There's a little, I mean, it's irrelevant in a way. It's just like how the mind, this mind seems to work, I'm finding out. It's like my heart's beating a little bit, like, am I going to be able to achieve, you know, to be up to the task or follow what I kind of committed to. I know that Tara couldn't care less. In a way, I don't either, but something in me does, apparently. It's not. And so it's just interesting to watch. I was like, oh, I'm not nervous like this, like a slight nervousness. You know? And so so I'll announce to you the theme, just to see how much the heart will beat. But also, it might be a way for me to stick with the plan, you know. To, by announcing it, it might help me try to explore this. This is all play. I'm playing with all this. And so what I intend to do, and that might or not happen, is was just starting with this idea of how does, that's in my words here, how does sati, or mindfulness, leads to the opening of the heart? So how does mindfulness lead to the opening of the heart? And I would think that there's many, many ways, and I'm amazed at this, the number of creative ways that, you know, there are to talk about this practice. Ways to practice, but also ways to talk about this practice. And I shouldn't be amazed, that's just what the mind does. You know, it plays with concept, it organizes things, it creates meaning of story. It can do this endlessly. We see it just being in silence. We can retell the story of what happened differently, and you know, try to plan the future. If that happened and this happened, and it's kind of endless. I don't know if you experience it like this, but it's amazing, the creative power of the mind. I remember one time I got a little bit in trouble with this, because I was with two friends, so there was three of us, and I asked one of the friend that was there about the other friend. We were the three together, and I said, "What do you appreciate about this friend of ours?" I was curious to. So I said, "What do you appreciate about this friend?" And so this person responded, "I am completely amazed at their capacity to create scenarios of how wrong it could go." Like their endless capacity to worry and, you know, plan for the worst. Like, that was their spontaneous response. Like, I'm amazed. I can't... fathom, like, the capacity of the mind to create so many bad scenarios, possible bad scenarios. And I was like, oh, maybe I shouldn't have asked that question. But the mind is creative in this way. It's beautiful. And so for me, the way I want to talk about this today is, I think, is by talking about... There's two things that come to mind. They work together. Is a way to talk about what we're doing here is a training in perception. or yeah, it's a training in perception. And I'll try to, you know, open this up for us, give meaning to this. But we're in a laboratory, and we're doing some training in perception, perceptual training. And the way we do this, as I understand, and it might not be exactly the way you are doing it this week, or the way you've learned to do it, but there's certainly some of this, and you'll see if you recognize this. And to me, one of the main way we do this is by deconstruction. We're deconstructing in so many ways. And the Buddha was also very creative in his ways of deconstructing reality. What we take usually to be like me, the story about me, it's me, and me on retreat. And suddenly we're like, okay, let's slow down a little bit. What is this that we call retreat? What is this that we call me? You know, what is the experience of a human being? What is it to be a human being? And there's many ways we can divide it. Ways that maybe you'll recognize outside of Buddhism, that we talk about, we divide our experiences inside and outside, maybe internal experience and the external. Maybe that would be one way. It's, you know, it's not that cut and dry, you know, but we can play with this. So inside I feel like shit, although there's a beautiful decor, you know. So here's the inside and the outside. Anyone recognize it? And so this would be, you know, one way. Another way would be maybe mental, physical. That's something we do in Buddhist thinking or approaches to practice. And, it doesn't totally do it, because sometimes there's an inner event, mental event that is happening, and it makes the heart beat or the jaw tense or the heart contract. And so there's a kind of a communication there. But we could talk about this like this, you know. I'm suffering a lot. Oh, is it, you know, pain in the knee, or is it that, you know, you're experiencing being separated from what is dear? The classic, very classic, that you might know of or not, but and we've been using that kind of division, because for us, I think for Tara and I in this lineage, it's the main way to divide experience is with what we call the four foundations. And so I think I've heard us in many ways refer to this. Maybe we know, we don't name it like this, but we know underneath the structure of our teaching is based on this division of the human experience. So what is a human experience? In a way you could say it's a body, it's materiality, physicality. So when we talk about the body, we'll talk about breath, about posture. You know, when you walk, know you walk. When you're sitting, know you're sitting. So we're attending, we're isolating a bit the physical aspect of our experience. And then there's something we call feeling tone or Vedana. Tara referred to this morning. So we say, with every experience that we have, there is some valence of pleasure or displeasure. A nice bird song, or a sound coming from the road over there that is slightly unpleasant, you know, and on with taste and with things felt in the body. Oh, that's a pleasant experience, that's an unpleasant experience. So that's a second foundation. So we take the whole of a human experience and we divide it. Often a retreat is built on this division. On the first day we'll talk about breath, second day we'll still do body with posture, with sensations, pain in the body. Then we'll get to another day and we'll talk about it could be this. We could invite, you know, when we do at 9:30 the instruction, maybe this, we're isolating an aspect of reality. And it might be an invitation to notice pleasure, the relationship to pleasure, to displeasure. So we're dividing our experience instead of being me and this is happening to me. There's like, oh, what's happening? Oh, there's a body here. It's breathing. Oh, there's a sensation. Oh, the sensation is unpleasant. Yeah. Another foundation is the quality of the mind, the heart mind, so the emotions. Tara talked about this today. So we're kind of isolating this a little bit. And we're saying, yes, it's me sitting here, but what's happening in this me sitting here? Well, suddenly there's quietness. Or irritation arises and passes. So we're deconstructing, no, would you say? But we're deconstructing our reality. Even with the body, it's not just you walking for 30 or 45 minutes. It's one step. One step. It's even lifting, pushing, placing, or intention to lift, lifting, intention to push, pushing, intention to place, placing. But that would be more like next week. If we were here, we would need to gather the mind to get to that level of subtlety. Our mind is, don't want to insult anyone, but our mind is a little too gross. Our attention is not enough refined, probably, for most of us to see this. It's much more subtle. But we're deconstructing everything. We're like, now this is a sitting. This is this moment. I even seem to hear Tara inviting us to deconstruct reality by moment to moment. I think I've heard you, Tara, say this a few times, moment by moment, or something, some expression like this, one moment at a time, you know? And so we're breaking down this experience that we usually, with superficial attention, it's all me, period. You're like, let's take some scissors. And there's a fourth foundation, I won't get into this today, but another way that the Buddha has to, and we might play with this later in the retreat, to divide experience, like, even of the body, he'll invite us to notice that what we call the body is actually a play of only four things. Earth, fire, water, there's one missing, sky, air. And so that's one way to start to deconstruct our reality. It's me, it's about me, it's happening to me. And we're like, let's notice the earth element, the pressing, has weight or is pressing. Let's notice that, yes, there is the gravity, but there's also a play of air, movement, rising, falling of the belly, air coming in and out. And there's also some play of water happening, dryness, wetness, fluidity, something like this. And then suddenly there's maybe heat because of anger or digestive heat. And so we come closer to our experience with this intention to deconstruct a bit the reality. And there was an invitation, I think, today to do this with emotions. I'm moving a little bit from bits and parts of experience to bits and parts of experience in the free way. But if I go back to emotion, I say, so what is an emotion? It's me. I feel like, you know, I'm so agitated. It's like, so what is agitation? Is it pleasant or unpleasant? We're deconstructing an emotion. I say, oh, it's actually unpleasant. Okay, that's... Where is it felt in the body? It's felt here. So there's a sensation to it, to anxiety, to fear, or maybe to joy. There's other sensations. And then this morning Tara was saying, is there a kind of a mood or tonality or texture? It's hard to, but a kind of a ambiance in the mind. Huh? So different, you know, if the mind is friendly, there's a certain ambiance in a friendly mind. If the mind is psycho-rigid, as we would say maybe in French, you know, like, it's like this, it should be like this, it should have been like this, this is how you do this, it's not like this, you know, it's like, oh, there's a certain quality of the mind. It's not like, oh yeah, these things happen, it's okay, you know. it's a different way of, so the thinking... So the story that it's told, how it's told, is a particular thing. The sensation is another thing. So we're deconstructing emotions, mind states. So we do this in all kinds of ways. There's even more ways. The five aggregates we mentioned. So it seems like a lot of what the Buddha is inviting us to do is to come close to experience and deconstruct it very slowly, very slowly. We actually have a kind of a, again, I'm using these words, I talk about practice in this way, there's other ways, and that's the beauty of it, there's other ways to talk about practice, but all these different ways to talk about it might help us understand what we're doing better or see for ourselves. I hope it doesn't create more confusion, but I wouldn't be against it also. You know, if I know too much what I'm doing, you know, like I'm slightly mistaken, it's good that there's some confusion. You know. So one way that I understand what we're doing is that we're trying also to locate or recognize the building blocks of reality. What are the building blocks? What is the basic matter that what I call me is made of? So I'm breaking down to the smallest bit. I'm trying to see what's the smallest bit. And so we're tending towards observing, connecting, perceiving reality in a more absolute way. That's a language that is used. Absolute reality. What are the building blocks of reality? The way we live our life, in Buddhist maybe psychology, we would call this the way we think of our life, perceive our life. We would maybe call it conventional reality. There's a conventional reality. They're the same, it's the same stuff that is happening, but it's different views. We can view it in a conventional way, or we can view it in an absolute way. I'll give you an example from the theater, because that's the world I kind of come from, and I like that world because of these two kinds of realities. Would you agree that when you go see a play, there's two kinds of realities? There's a reality that we all agree on. Maybe we say, let's pretend it's happening in the 18th century, shall we? Okay, let's pretend. We'll dress up, and you and I will pretend we're brother and sister, and we're not having a good time, you know? We'll pretend that everybody, they saw you in another, you know, sitcom on TV, they saw me playing Hamlet or something else, or just the valet of Hamlet in the back, you know, the guard. But we all agree, it's a conventional reality, huh? It's an agreed upon reality. We say, okay, let's pretend it's another time. And as we agree on this, we buy into it some, and then our hearts start beating. Oh my God, I wonder what is it going to do to his sister? You know, and oh, she can't call. At that time, there was no cell phone. She's caught in the house without a phone. And we buy into it, huh? And it's juicy. It's very juicy. And it's lovely to go to the theater and pretend that this actress is that character, you know? And so it's the same here with reality, in a way. We say there's a kind of an agreed upon reality, but we haven't questioned it, you know? Like again, in the conventional, in the theater, you know, there'll be a weapon, you know, like, oh, it's the knife, and I go like this, and it's a device, huh? It's a prop, no? The metal bit is plastic, and it's soft, and it comes in and out. You know, as I do this, and we're like, oh my God. And so what it looks like it is, it's not exactly this when you look closer. It's a little different. It's actually maybe completely different. You're like, oh my God, it's a prop. There's nothing sharp to it. You know, it's just soft. And so the way we live our life, in the Buddhist psychology, it says that we live in a conventional reality, conventional understanding of reality. So we take things personal, we think it's happening to me, and we think about me and me later, and what happened to me or and mine, my people, or whatever, like this, and that's the view we have. And here we're doing some deconstruction to see, Is that absolute, absolutely true? Or is it just conventional? It's a kind of an understanding, a kind of an agreement that we maybe unconsciously have bought into. So this is what spiritual practice is. We're going to see what is real. What is actually real? That's the quest of the Buddha. It's like, what is actually mine? What is actually me? And so we slow down. Oh no, he's not going to start with this slow down. Let go of some of the busyness and preoccupation with the story. There has to be some conditions for this research to happen. You know, if when the bell rings, I go back to my room and I just keep telling my story of myself and later and this and that, and I'm on my phone texting, and I come back here and like, I understand nothing. Of course, it's not possible because I'm caught in that conventional reality. I have to do some letting go, some kind of act of faith. Like, okay, let me let go of all my fascinations and explore the world in a different way. And so we're going to see, you know, we slow down and we sit. It's like, okay, what in conventional reality we would call the body? Let's see if that holds, if there is such a thing as a body. And lo and behold, we might discover that there is no such thing. Why are you doing on Thursday, next Thursday's talk? It's a little early for that. Well, I'm going there. And so as we sit here and we pay attention to the body, we might discover along the way that there's no body. There's no body per se, no solid. There's just like, at some point it's hot, at some point it's cold, at some point it's tingling, at some point it's numb. At some point it's kind of centered and light, at some point it feels crooked and it's painful. Would you agree some, a little bit, that this what we call the body is almost like, to use an image here, it would be a river of sensation, or a field of changing sensations. And the purpose of slowing down and bringing the best quality attention in the moment is to discover that the body is a concept. It's referring to a whole wide range of experiences. The body that was outside in the grass earlier, and now this experience here is so different. No, it's my body, that's it. I don't want to hear anything else about it. Well, wrong place. Because here we're questioning all assumptions. The Buddha went very, very far. He questioned everything that seemed like basic. Well, it's a basic fact that we have a body. Well, let's check it out. Is that true? Does that hold? Let's pay attention. Let's stay attentive. And one moment it's an experience of expansion. The next, it's an experience of contraction. Maybe even for a few seconds, up to 20 minutes, there might be no body at all, because I'm so much in my head that there was no toes there in experience. No toes, no legs, no nothing. I was just like over there having that fight with somebody about something, you know. And suddenly, when the bell rings or somebody sneezes or something happens, and that suddenly body appears in experience. Maybe it might be useful to understand. That's how I understand it, I'll put it this way, that the Buddha is interested in life, the nature of things, from the point of view of a human being, not from another point of view. He's interested in the point of view of a human being. For a human being, this is changing all the time. I remember this strong insight into this. One time I was at the Insight Meditation Society, where we've practiced a lot and I've been trained and teach. It was in winter and I was walking outside on the road. Maybe at the break I had gone for a longer walk on the road. And I was walking back to IMS. It was winter, big snow. Banks, bonne neige. And so road narrow, much countryside road, very narrow because lots of snow. And I was walking up towards the Insight Meditation Society, and suddenly a big yellow school bus was coming. And it was coming down the hill, and I was coming up, and I was trying to be on the no sidewalk, you know, like kind of in the snow. And the bus was coming, and it was like getting larger by the second. You know, it was like expanding like this. And I was walking, and at some point there was bus, you know, like that was the whole of my experience was yellow bus, you know, passing by in my heart, like, you know, and then it was gone, and suddenly I felt my leg walking. I was still walking. And I was like, wow, they had completely disappeared. There was no legs there. I don't know if somebody from the outside who was watching could have said, no, they were still there. But from the point of view of experience, of a human being, of this one, from that subjective point of view, they vanished and reappeared, you know, or arose, appeared. And so here we'll do this with, that's why it's the first foundation, it's the first invitation, the first aspect of life that we're invited to come close to. So we can develop this wisdom to know that it's dynamic, it's changing. Why would we care about this? Well, honey pie, aging, sickness, and death are clear experiences of change, you know, in the body. And so we're slowly preparing here for that. We want to, training in perception, we want to train ourselves to not solidify things. That's a tendency of the mind that conceptualizes. What is a concept? If you ask me, a concept is a bunch of moving things that you gather together and you say, tree. But it's something that loses its leaves, breaks down, changes form, you know, it's something very alive, changing all the time, you know, but I call it tree, you know. And so here we're training in perception, we're trained to become sensitive to the dynamic nature of things. It's to prepare for death. It's to prepare for the death of our loved ones. It's to prepare for sickness. It's also to liberate ourselves from wrong view, from mistaken view, identity or appropriation. Maybe we made something mine, it's my body. We made it mine, and when it starts changing or... like we get very confused. Of course we would, you know. I believe this was mine and solidly mine and absolutely mine. I didn't know it was made from nature, conditional. It was something dynamic the whole time. At some point it was on its fours, and at some point it stood up and fell down, you know. And it's changing. It's changing. And it's in complete relationship with nature. With what's in the air, water, earth. It's completely, it's not apart at all. We call this the environment, but it's not at all. We are, in a way, the earth, and we're going to return to it. And we isolate it in some way. It's very, you know, cultural thing to do, probably. we were taught this, maybe by our parent. Your nose, your arm. You know, and okay, I bought into this, it made sense. It was good for a while, it's conventionally useful, but it's limited and limiting. And so here, this is spiritual practice. We're training ourselves to perceive things as they truly are, as they actually are, not ours, not solid, dynamic, changing. And so that's what we're doing here when we slow down and we pay attention. We do this with the body, and then we start to do this with the heart, or mind, if you will. I don't mind. You use the word that resonates for you. And we start to this, you know, we sit here, and we notice that it keeps commenting. And so we're deconstructing our beliefs without, I'm thinking, I'm doing the thinking. It doesn't take much, very long to start to discover that I'm not doing the thinking, it's doing itself. And now it's going this way, you know. Or is it, am I at least beginning to touch something, even if it doesn't seem absolutely right, like at least some of the time, right? You know? And suddenly there's things that are being said that are coming from the either the culture, the dominant culture, from capitalism, from, like, I'd be sitting here and I'd want to be shopping for something. It's somebody's cooking for me, I have clothes, everything, but I'd prefer to be at the Walmart next door. You know, is it really my thoughts or something got through, got conditioned, you know, that I seem to exist by acquiring something with me, you know? Maybe not you, you're spiritual. I'm not. I'm just starting on this path. But there's this, you know, this message about, you know, you're sitting there and instead of being just with a body, an experience of sensation changing, you know, we're stuck with a body that is not enough. It's too much like this or not enough like this. It's like, where? It's not the right color. It's not the right form. It's not the right age. It's not like, these are my thoughts. Are they really my thoughts? Or are they coming from cause and conditions, from exposure to delusion through media, through magazines, through values of a, you know, deluded society? And here I am, suddenly hating myself. I think it's my thoughts, but maybe it's not. Maybe it's just, you know, intoxication from the environment, you know, that I've been in. And so I discover, oh, these are not my thoughts. These are learned thoughts, learned biases that I have against myself or others. And so we have the chance here with the silence, with the length of the time, where deep time, I almost want to say, that we're in to actually notice these arisings. And these things arise, they do their maybe oppressive thing, and then they vanish, and we start to notice, oh, this is not exactly me, it's something that arises, it comes from somewhere else, but it's been internalized, maybe it's been. And so we're deconstructing thoughts, we're deconstructing emotions. You know, we fear, we don't want to feel some emotion, and slowly we gain some kind of patience, courage, slight curiosity, we come a little closer, and we discover that, oh, it's just pressure in the chest. It's just, I was fearing this, hating this, despising this, fearing its present, you know. And now I'm learning that I can actually allow for, you know, however it feels, contracted or broken or hollow or acid or electric or numb or frozen or, that I can come close to and allow it to be known. And it's not exactly me, it's an event that is happening. And I start to deconstruct anxiety, I start to deconstruct shame. Oh, it's a certain grouping maybe of sensations. And the belief that I'm worthless is something else. They're in a relationship. One causes maybe the other, but they're two things. They're not like one, oh my God. It's just, oh yeah, there's this oppression, this contraction in the chest, and this sense of a bad self. You know? This is an impression. So we're deconstructing emotions and experiences of the body. So we're getting closer to the building blocks. Even it goes far. Even what we, you know, what we might think of, or let's start with just this. I might think of this is essentially me, essential me. Okay, the body, okay, I'll give you that. It's changing, okay. But the consciousness inside, that is moi. Don't you dare touch this. You know? what experiences, what witnesses, what is observing. This is solid, permanent me. Okay? And as we pay attention, as we slow down and pay attention, we might discover, oh, this moment of knowing a sound vanished with the sound. This moment of feeling sensations appeared with the sensation. This moment of knowing this heat on the skin earlier outside, this moment of knowing was ephemeral. There was a moment of knowing, it came and it went. Where is that moment of knowing? It's gone. We might go that far to actually start to question even what is core me in my belief or sense or impression or perception, because it is a training in perception. What I've been trained to perceive as core me, essential, unchanging me, the Buddha at least, questioned these perceptions and went to see, is there a core me there? Don't touch this, Pascal, that's the only thing left for me. Well, I'm touching it because apparently it leads to a lot of suffering, that view. It's isolating, it brings fear. And in the practice we have the chance to go and check this out. Is that true? Somebody was in the group today, was kind of touching a bit on this, or maybe another aspect that we deconstruct, you know, intention. The intention to speak, the intention to go back to my room instead of walking, the intention to scratch, the intention to reflect and think about something, the intention. We might think also this is core me. You know, I'm the one emitting the intention, formulating or creating the intention. I'm the one intending. And as we slow down and we pay attention, we might discover that, wow, how wild is this? Even that intending is not exactly me. Even that little building block of intention arises and dies. You know, to me it's really interesting that, you know, we're all sitting like this, quiet, and at some point you hear a sound, there's a sound, and suddenly, everybody has the intention to open the eyes and move the legs a bit. It's like, I decide to move. You do, but it's interesting that you decided then. Were the conditions supportive for this intention to arise? I remember on retreat, sometimes I would sit in the dining hall. I would, with fork, I would kind of, what is the... Pick broccoli, let's see. And I would just stand there with the broccoli on fork in hand, just like this. And the intention to go towards my mouth would arise. Like the conditions were there for the intention to do this, you know? If there was just the fork and not the broccoli, like said, somehow, like the intention was not there. If there was the broccoli but no fork, the intention of moving the arm like this was not there. But if there is arm, fork, broccoli, that might be just enough to tend to want to do this. I'm playing with this, but it's deep stuff. You wouldn't know it, but it's very deep stuff. That's why sometimes, you know, I'm back in bed and I'm like, why did I say this? Why did I say this? You know, there was something that was happening, you know, some emotion made me say something to look better, to... Does that happen to you? Or only to French Canadians? You know, like, why did I say this? It's not exactly you who said this. It was fear. It was greed. It was wanting to be seen in a certain way. It was need to control. There was something. And what I'm saying, this doesn't... doesn't exclude responsibility. I can be fully responsible for what I say, what I do, and yet recognize that that there was this action, these words were led by delusion, were led by you know, some emotion that was there, some mind state, some lack of consideration, some attachment, greed, some, you know, hatred, etc. And through this work of deconstructing, of going to see the building blocks of reality, consciousness, intention, emotions, thoughts, sensations, these are the kind of building blocks, we could say, of reality, to go and isolate them. It's very delicate to do. You cannot just like, okay, let's go do it. No, if the mind has been superficial and busy and fascinated by its own thoughts, we won't be able to do the deconstruction. It takes very particular conditions that we're trying to create here to do this deconstruction. And when we have isolated a little, a block of reality, a little basic block of reality, then we want to see its basic features, its basic, how it's behaving. How is a sensation behaving? How is an intention behaving? What are the basic characteristics of these building blocks? Are you following me a little bit here? I hope. I so hope. And so we're going to see like these little things called sensations, called mind states, called that are of the public domain. Who owns sensations here? No, it's of the public domain. It happens. It's natural. It's in nature. Sensation is little events happening in nature. And so are moods and emotions. And so we try to isolate them with attention and see how they behave. And we've given a few hints on this up to now. And some of you know that in the course of practice, we'll see their main features of these little things, how they behave, how they, their characteristics. I'm trying to use different words to talk about this. So what is the main thing about the sensation? Some are pleasant and some are unpleasant. So it's not the absolute universal feature of a sensation to be pleasant. Huh? Would you agree? It's sometimes pleasant, sometimes unpleasant. But what is it at its core? What is it, its core characteristic? What is its nature? Like, what is it really made of? Well, many have found that all sensations, those pleasant, those unpleasant, those felt by me, those felt by others, those of the past, future, present, all have in common to be impermanent. And so this is the training in perception here. We're trained to like these perceptions and don't like these. We're trained to want these sensations and not want the other sensations. And here we're saying we're going to train to actually see how they arise and pass, because it's going to be really liberating to see this. Something in the heart will open, be released, some kind of false view, expectations, will be released from thinking that, you know, we should only have good sensations, that we can control them, that we're going to see that they arise and pass. This is insight. I'm saying this just with words. It's so limited. It's information. It's very superficial. With words, I can only get that far. Maybe other teachers are better than me. They can transmit in some way. But you know, this is information here. Maybe there's something we can reflect on. Has this been true for me? That the sensations I've felt in my life have not been permanent. That's worth... No, I've always felt great. Okay, good. That's a good start. Let's start there. You know, I've always been in control. Okay, so the sense of being in control... Others have found that it comes and goes. Mostly it goes. But let's slow down and pay attention. Maybe we'll discover you know, that it's different, you know, that it comes and goes. And it might be liberating, and it might open the heart to notice this, oh my God, sensation. So we can receive this information, we can think about this, that's a second depth, layered depth, you know, reflecting about this, has it been true? That the sensations or emotions, or take pretty much anything, intentions, have been fluctuating in my life, has that been true? So you think about this. But that's also limited. There's something else needed for liberation. It's repeated, lucid experience of the disappearance and appearance of these things. And that's what we're doing here. We're creating the conditions to train, to do this perceptual training to see the arising and passing of sensations. That's why we say we're invited to feel the breath. So we can notice it comes and goes. It comes and goes. If you don't want the breath, it makes you feel tight and controlled, and it's a little oppressive to be with the breath. No problem, honey. You be with sounds and silence, and you'll notice the same thing. Sounds come and go. The proof is in the pudding. You don't want to do sounds? I'm tired. I've heard the instructions about sound. Do taste. You know, you'll notice how tastes appear and disappear. You want to do it with emotions? You'll see the fluctuation. You'll go from angry to very angry, to frustrated, to exhausted of being angry, to shutting down, and other possibilities also. And we'll notice, not I don't want this one and I want that one, but look at how they fluctuate. Yeah. So this is one of the basic way that phenomena to group together all the different events, you know, perceptions, thoughts, emotions, views, intentions, sensations, everything that makes a human being has the characteristic to come and go. And meditation creates the condition for us to experience this. There's nothing like experiencing it, and we need to experience it again and again. That's why it's you know, it's 6 days, because it takes 3 days to calm down. And then there's maybe a couple of days to see a few arising and passing. You know, that's why we say staying. So we can, you know, if we're going to the next thought, the next fascination, if we stay a little bit, we're going to see something arise and pass. Maybe just the sound of the bird, or the passing of the insect, or the flashing through of an idea, a desire, want to be home now, you know, and see, stay with this. You'll see at some point, whoops, it will vanish maybe. Another characteristic that we'll find out is that any of these things, any of these little building blocks of reality, any of what our reality is made of, can be totally satisfying. Just when I thought that relationship should have been satisfying, and I'm still angry at the person because it should have been satisfying, you know? I'm discovering through practice that things don't have in them the nature to satisfy completely. It's because they come and go. They're unstable, they change, they're liable to conditions. They're shaky. They can't do this. Institutions can't do this. Others can do this. I can't. No, I will. I'm working really hard on my self-development. At some point, my personality is going to be really satisfying for me and others. I'm almost there. On Instagram, it is. I've managed to control it. It's really satisfying. I'm really satisfied about how it looks on Instagram. It looks always happy. Always has the best experience, the best coffee with the best heart on the shape, whatever it is, you know. But by paying attention here, we'll start to notice, things appear and disappear. They can't provide in this way. And the liberation can be this, you know, this liberation of renouncing, letting go of this satisfaction being found in whatever it is that I'm projecting satisfaction on. It it seems kind of a bad news. It's so intriguing that on the path, it's really liberating. Oh. And I kept demanding of myself to be perfect or do everything right. And I'm noticing, actually, things can't do this. So neither can I. It's not going to be possible for me to... Ah, peace. Things are going to be... so sorry, in English you don't have that word. You might have something that comes close to it. But in French we have this word, bancal. Bancal, it means...
Unstable?
Yeah, unstable is a good choice. Bancal means... usually it refers to you go to a restaurant and the table is just a little, or the chair is a little. So every time you're talking with your friend, you put your hands, the coffee spills, or you know, it's like. So this is the nature of things, of events, of phenomena. They're not perfect from the point of view of a human being who's sensitive to things that work well, that beautiful things that last, things that are not fun that don't last. You know. And in reality, that's not exactly like this. Sometimes things, they disappear before we would like them to disappear. Or they stay as we would like them to go. Or they come uninvited, you know. And so that's what happens in reality. Things are, unstable. Is that what you just said? Unstable. And so when we start to touch this with more intimacy, there's something that is touched in the heart, the vibrant heart. It's kind of bittersweet, maybe is a way to talk about this. But it's also brings some kind of relief to be aligned with things as they are, to be aligned with nature. Because always when you think like things should go well and they don't, you know, you're always disappointed, always kind of surprised, shocked a bit. Oh, it didn't work out, you know. Well, it's not supposed to. Or maybe it does for a while, but it's very natural that it would break down or that it wouldn't connect as it could, you know. And so what it can do is it can open the heart in a way that nothing else can. It can be a kind of a ripping open of the heart. It's kind of this painful, but there's a tenderness that can arise from that recognition. There's a tenderness. Oh, look at this. We're all trying to find satisfaction in this and that and accumulations or experiences or stabilizing things, and it's not possible to stabilize things. Wow. Maybe there's a possibility for compassion to arise for us, for human beings, and their mistaken views, understanding of the world. Are they constantly disappointed or surprised or confused? You know, we're deluded. And with this, maybe there's a way to enter in a different relationship with the world, with the body, with our relationships, you know, knowing, you know, there's going to be, you know, challenges. It's going to be unstable, it's going to change. If the thing doesn't change itself, my view of it will at some point. You know, it looked desirable in you, and you know, and then when I'm in contact with it, suddenly start to see the defective nature, maybe, or the incapacity for this thing to provide deeply. And there's tons of nuances, you know, to what I'm just saying here. But I think there is something to this that needs to be considered. So we slow down, we pay attention, we're deconstructing our reality, building block by building block. We're isolating in a way, we're coming close to building blocks, and we start to see how they behave, these little events. A sound, a taste, a mood, a situation. And by paying attention in a certain way, with mindfulness, paying attention to how it behaves, we're going to discover, it's unstable, it's changing. It was there and then it's gone. And we do this with very small things. Like for me earlier was just, I walk, I reach the end of the little path. There's a certain view, there's depth here, there's beauty because of the rows of trees. And, like you see far away. And there's an experience, it's a visual experience. And it's a pleasant visual experience for me at that moment of space and nature. And then I turn. And oh, it's gone. It was so conditional. It was conditional to me facing that way. I just changed one little condition. I faced the other way. And then that view is gone. Suddenly there's asphalt. It's gone. And you're like, no, it's behind. You can turn. But, it's a way to discover, oh, it's very ephemeral. You just change a little something and it's gone. I remember one time, I've told this story a couple of times, you might have heard it. One time I was with somebody at the time, a partner, and we were by a beautiful river with waterfalls. And at that particular waterfall, like others have that too sometimes, if you go on the other side of the wall of the waterfall, there's a little kind of little space where you can breathe and you're safe and there's a wall, of light maybe coming through the... And so we were there. It was a beautiful day and we just were playing at coming in and out and kind of, in awe of nature and this possibility of coming under the waterfall and coming out. And at some point there were people on the other bank of the river. There was a group of young men. And they were drinking and having fun, and we could hear them laugh and tell jokes, and it was pretty lively. And at some point, I think they understood that we were a couple. And maybe alcohol helping, they started to shout things. We couldn't really hear, but we could sense the aggression. And it was really remarkable how suddenly, there was still this beautiful day, this beautiful sunshine, the green forest, the waterfall. Nothing had disappeared, but it felt very, very different. It felt unpleasant is a euphemism here. It felt dangerous, it felt threatening. Like the access to beauty was it was still there. You would say, yeah, I didn't even have to turn around, It was there. The waterfall was falling, but it was not fun anymore. It was dangerous. That's how it felt, or maybe that was the intention, maybe, to play. That's what we call cruelty, maybe. It's like, let's make their fun fade, and disappear completely. Let's see how much power we have, as a group, And suddenly there was like, where's the exit? How can we exit? And the way out, back to the parking lot, was the path that we knew was through these people. And we're like, oh, And there's a chance that it would be nothing else, just laughing at the, at the faggots. But the unsubstantial nature of beauty, the unstable nature of beauty, was revealed very clearly to me. It was like, wow, suddenly there's no more beauty. It's still all the same things, but it's has switched. It's disappeared. And actually I've never gone back there. And the partner of the time told me I went there several times to reclaim that place, But it's a work, to do this. And so that shows that, even beautiful waterfall with the right amount of pressure that you can actually go under and there's a wall is unstable. In this way, very, very, it can change in a second. You not even need somebody else, just the thought of yours. Just something that would come in as a thought. And whoops, suddenly the beauty's gone. And so here we come closer to this, and it makes us vulnerable. It has the capacity to open the heart. Maybe in the word of Zenju, earthen manual, you know, it can give us access to complete tenderness for the world we're in. And maybe out of this can be born a desire not to hurt. You know, you discover how fragile the sense of safety is, how fragile, how unstable. And then, very naturally, in this practice, metta will arise. Oh, I so want to folks to be safe. It's very natural. I so want to people to feel safe. I don't want my words, action, or our as a group, as a dominant group. I don't want our to actually be to the detriment. So it's going to take care. It's going to take a lot of honesty and care and listening, considering. This is the opening of the heart through this practice, as I understand it. So there's a shaking of the heart, compassion, trembling of the heart. And equanimity is also coming from that. When there's a deep understanding that things are going to break, there's something in the heart that can relax. Okay, there's going to be old age, there's going to be disease, there's going to be death. It's a spiritual practice, it's a real practice is the right word here. We have to practice, we have to train to actually come close to this and accept this. This deep acceptance of the shaky nature of the world. And then the heart in ways liberated and it can get engaged. It's not just acceptance. Oh, this is how it is. No, it's a deep recognition. And a deep recognition includes a recognition of agency. I can do something about this. You know, I can contribute in some way to the safety, the well-being of others through my words, my action, creativity. Let me be attentive to find the opportunities. And suddenly I'm not in acquiring anymore, in hate anymore, I'm in care. So that's me trying to say how this practice of mindfulness through deconstruction, through discovering how the building blocks of reality are transient, ephemeral, impermanent, shaking, unstable, cannot be fully, absolutely owned, because changing, how this can lead to the opening of the heart. Okay, thank you so much for your consideration. Thank you. May all beings, no one excluded, be protected truly by our practice, by our waking up to what's going on inside ourselves and between ourselves, amongst ourselves. Okay, bon appétit.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.